Welcome to this special episode of The Burning Platform. Now, in the last 2 weeks, we've held two separate events hosted by Justice Malala and then by Penuel, the Black Pen, and they've been phenomenal. They've been leaders from political parties who've accepted our invitation to talk about 100 days of the GNU. That's the first 100 days of the government of national unity. How are we doing, South Africa? What are the burning issues? These are the important conversations, and we've decided that it's well worth keeping these as part of the Burning Platform series. So you get to join in on them, and you get to leave your thoughts in the comments section. As always, we check all of them. Make sure you subscribe to the Podcast Party's YouTube channel. That's Podcast Party SA, and you will get notifications. Therefore, you don't have to miss a thing. Make sure you like, subscribe, all of that stuff. And now, 100 days of the GNU.
Thanks so much. Welcome, everyone. It's so good to see so many familiar, friendly faces here. So I know that the hard questions will be for my guests, not for me. For people who will be joining us on the podcast, my name is Justice Malala. I'm a journalist and a commentator. I have amazing guests today. Many of you in the room know them. Nobuntu Sazo-Webster, co-founder and co-founder of Build One SA, and now a member of our parliament. Welcome.
Thank you.
Michael Beaumont, very familiar to many of you, co-founder of Action SA and national chair of the organization. Michael was congratulating me on my book, and I was so embarrassed. I wanted to tell him his book about how he and Herman Mashaba tried to rebuild Johannesburg is really something that all of us should read. As Rina said in her introduction, I split my time between here a lot and New York a lot, and I never know where I am. But the nicest thing about coming to South Africa since this election is coming back to a sense of optimism in the air. People feeling like we can do something, we are on the cusp of something amazing and so forth. And you know, you look at Ipsos and the Social Research Foundation, all these guys saying, wow, it's going to be fantastic and so forth. So when I learned that I'm going to be interviewing these two amazing people, I started thinking, Is it for real? Does it work? Am I in that trap, which I have been in 2018? And it's a new dawn. Our problems are finished. We can go across the world and it's all happy. And it's all good. And then nothing happened and the lights went out and so forth. So I'm optimistic at the moment, but I'm also very scared about what this means, because South Africa is one of those places where your hopes go up and then they are dashed by political players. So I'm going to give you guys 4 minutes each to give me your experience of the past 100 days, to give me your thoughts on how we've done or what we haven't done. Nobuntu, shall I start with you? Because you've been at the coalface in Parliament fighting the good fight. How have you found it?
Sure. Good evening, Justice, and to everyone that's here. I'm looking forward to this conversation. It is an important one. It's a difficult one for those of us who are outside of the GNU, because you speak about the optimism. And sometimes it's difficult to have to relay some of what are the core truths that we're finding. So, you know, it's always a little bit of a difficult conversation to have. But to say that it's important that we have the optimism and we need it. I think we came into the GNU, all of us, optimistic, looking at the fact that, you know, you had a diverse group of political parties that all had different strengths to bring to the table, and looking at the fact that actually I was incredibly proud of South Africans, because when we'd been complaining about the governance of the ANC and when we'd been complaining about the state of South Africa, South Africans, unlike many of our counterparts on the continent, South Africans actually made the decision to bring the ANC below the majority. So there's a lot to be proud of, and there's a lot that was to be optimistic about. But I mean, being in Parliament and being in the coalface and looking at what's happening, while there is some progress, you know, while there are some things that are looking positive, there also is a lot that is still the same. There's a lot that hasn't changed. I sit primarily in the Portfolio Committee for Trade, Industry and Competition. And it's an important one given the economic recovery which we need to have in this country. I sit on the Small Business Development Portfolio Committee in education, basic education, as well as in water. Now, the reality is that having been sitting in these portfolio committees and doing that work, there is a lot that went wrong in the previous terms, particularly with governance, particularly with actually just delivery. And unfortunately, there's a lot that doesn't seem to have changed in terms of the current administration taking seriously those gaps, those governance gaps and those governance holes, and taking seriously what needs to change within some of these departments. And so you have that, but then you also have a consequence of the journey, which is the fact that 70% of parliament is in the GNU. And so I say this to say, we sit on these portfolio committees and you see the glaring issues, but you now have a party like the DA that was very loud as an opposition about what was wrong in government that are now mum completely. Yeah. Some of them sit as deputy ministers in these departments, some as ministers. And as you raise and see these issues, they are completely quiet. So it is very important that parties like ourselves, who chose to stay outside of the GNU, and for this very reason of playing a constructive opposition role, play that role and make sure that we hold the government accountable. So primarily, that's what it is. There's a reality that 100 days into it, there are issues in terms of legacy issues which are not being taken seriously and that are not changing. There are issues in terms of the fact that you have a smaller opposition and you have the majority of parliament sitting in the executive. And lastly, you have the issue that you have to deal with of the fact that 100 days in, there will be policy issues and there will be, we've already seen with the Bella Bill, we've already seen with the NHI, and those were not discussed and engaged upon and agreed upon upfront.
Thank you. That's a lovely summation. Can I ask you a follow-up, one quick follow-up question? And it's this, what strikes me is almost like you feel like, oh, it's the honeymoon. I can't criticize my partner because it's early days. I almost feel like you're holding back.
We are criticizing for days, but we also have to make sure that we do recognize that the GNU in and of itself, its very existence, is an attempt to bring some kind of change. But the reality is that, like I say, those are three glaring issues, and unapologetically we have to confront them, and we are confronting them every single day.
Michael Beaumont, you said a couple of days ago, yesterday, I think, that we have an Instagram government. Tell me about that.
Well, I guess it stems from the concern that what we're really seeing is ministers and members of this grand coalition, I try not to call it a GNU when I can help it, who spend a lot of time running around making announcements about change, more than there seems to be real changes taking place. You've got to understand that the DNA of government is policies and legislation. Mm-hmm. And unless you are going to change that DNA, effectively what you have is all of those ministers and all of those departments with their hundreds of thousands of employees, many of whom have had the line between party and state eroded for so long, implementing what they were doing before. And I think we're seeing that right across the particular GNU. What we are also concerned about is the policy lechotla that took place in July. There was this policy lechotla, they were going away, they were going to hash out their differences, and yet here we are in October, and it's kind of been radio silence ever since. Mm. And for us, you're looking at a scenario where whatever you do, it has to start from a point of view of strategy and direction. What is the strategy of this government? What is the direction and course it is setting? And what are the KPIs against which we as a country can hold this government to account and see what the scoreboard is doing. Are they achieving what they're meant to, or are they not? And in the absence of that, we came together on Monday and launched a GNU tracker, which is to put down KPIs of unemployment, economic growth, debt to GDP ratio, the number of new HIV and AIDS infections every year, violent crime rates in the country, etc. Because these are the national KPIs. You don't have to struggle to understand that these are the issues that South Africans are most deeply seized by. And yet there's been no clear indication what the national agenda is under this government, to the point that individual parties in the GNU make pronouncement on their party political agenda within the government, which is quite confusing and quite incoherent. And from our point of view, that's been a concern. Our secondary concern is, when you look at the past 100 days, there has been good. And let's call it like it is, because a government that delivers is good for South Africa. And when Nobuntu talks about a constructive opposition, we speak the same language in that regard. We don't want to be that opposition that just poo-poos everything and it's just negative. We want to lend our support when it matters. And I suspect one day it will. But at the end of the day, you're looking at a scenario where, yes, the Home Affairs portfolio appears to be making particular inroads that I think are quite exciting. I think the discussions around Starlink and the communications portfolio, I'm sorry, the minister's not here. I believe he was going to be. That's an exciting development and a game changer in South Africa. And certainly there are one or two things, and we must credit our Minister of Energy. I know a lot of those changes were in the previous term, but here we are 7 months and counting with the lights on, and isn't it wonderful? But at the same time, there are some things we need to point to and say, sure, are we looking at multi-party delivery of the ANC agenda that was voted out in this election? So it begins with the horse trading of premeditated votes on the Palapala issue during the coalition being set up. It moves on to the largest cabinet in South African history, populated by political parties who swore we needed a smaller cabinet. We've now gone on to people who were opposed to CADA deployment sending memos saying, can we reduce the standards of the people we're appointing in our political offices? And lately, we now have a justice minister who's implicated in the VBS saga not being dealt with by the president, but giving the president a free pass on Palapala. And she's the one presiding over the NPA. And I think it would be fair to say that there's a few of these things that feel a bit too familiar for us, because if you believe that power corrupts, well, then 71% power is going to corrupt most absolutely.
Let's talk about that supermajority. 71%, as you say, both of you have mentioned, is extraordinary. And you mentioned something at the beginning. You said you don't want to call it a GNU, but a grand coalition. Are we then, when we peel this onion, are we saying that this is essentially smaller parties, just cover for the ANC to do what it's always done?
Absolutely. And I must say, when we met with the ANC after the election to communicate our decision not to enter the arrangement, and to do so respectfully and to tell them what we meant by a constructive opposition, we took issue with 19.3. This clause of the agreement, if any of you are not familiar with its individual terms, it says sufficient consensus is defined when 60% of the seats of parliament agree on something. And the only pathway towards that in the GNU is the DA and the ANC. Mm. So it is a grand coalition. Helen Zille said it, she's correct. Mm. And effectively what you really have is a bunch of political parties who wouldn't be sniffing power if it wasn't for the advent of MK, leaping into the German sedans and the pleasures and joys of government. And who can blame them? I mean, these are parties that may not be around in the next parliament, much less having an opportunity to govern. But you've got to understand that the numbers here make that the major coalition. And I think the ANC had to dress this thing up because of its own internal dynamic and the way in which its tripartite alliance and other parts of its organization have repelled the idea of a coalition of the
day. I would push back against you and say Cyril Ramaphosa is a champion. He brought us all together. Here we are, the PAC and the ANC are all together under one tent.
I would push back against that.
Yeah.
And say that was to save their own skin as the ANC, really and truly speaking. The reality is that And I think Michael's mentioned it. For us, we also had conversations with the ANC post-elections. And the reality is that what we could not see was an agreement on how we would govern together. Mm. It was really more about patronage, more than anything else. And given that fact, you're seeing the results of that now. You're seeing the consequences of that now. You're really seeing a government that has come together and parties that have come together because they found a way to be able to progress their own agendas. More than you have an agreement that has said, here's what we want to achieve. You do not even have a sense of KPIs that have been given or that have been agreed upon for each of the portfolios. You do not even have a sense of each political party going back and even saying to their own structures, here is what we are committing to deliver on. Here are the KPIs, let alone to the public, that we are going to deliver on in this term. What you have is an agreement of, here's what we're going to take. Here are the portfolios we are going to take. Here's what we're going to have. And you actually then have a protection, like I said, of some of the mismanagement, some of the governance issues, some of the corruption that takes place. And like I said, you then have what would have been opposition voices, those who are in there. Michael mentions Palapala and other sort of protection that we're seeing.
Recent history, 1994, Nelson Mandela forms a GNU, not in a similar vein, but it's a GNU. 2 years later, the National Party walks out. But just 10 years later, the National Party is totally obliterated. And you can go back to that GNU and say, this is how the National Party died. It seems to me both of you are almost winking, almost flagging that this could be the end of the major opposition, and that's the DA you've mentioned. This could be the end of that of these parties in some way, or for them to be gobbled up by the big fish, the ANC.
I think it's entirely possible. And I think from our point of view, there were a lot of things that went into our decision-making. But one thing was, if we are going to lend our 6 seats, which in the grand scheme of things is not going to change the complexion of the government, you know, we really are going to end up as a minor player in this government, co-opted into this thing, culpable in everything that it does wrong, and questioning what it is you can drive as change in that portfolio. And I want to give you a good example. The Freedom Front Plus leader, and I use that example because they've got 6 seats and we have 6 seats, is the Minister of Correctional Services. And he's made a couple of headlines by being involved in raids to correctional services. I mean, how many raids can you really do? At the end of the day, correctional services can only be really reformed if there's going to be increased budget, building of more prisons, and the kind of programs that are going to result in, you know, harsher dealings with violent criminals and better rehabilitation of people who can be rehabilitated. Now, that's not part of the policy agenda of this government, not that anyone knows what entirely the policy agenda is at this stage. And I think from our point of view, we look to that to say, we're going to end up being involved in something where, do we see the unemployment rate changing under this government, economic growth going up, violent crime going down? Could we be complicit in something that in a few years' time, we're going to be explaining to voters in a way that we can't really explain?
Tell me, how long will this thing last then? You've had friction around the Bella Bill Act. You've had friction around NHI. You've mentioned policy. These are two key policy issues. The ANC has signed, President Ramaphosa had signed them into law anyway, and sort of nodded that I'll give you 3 months to sort out the language issue and the self-school governing bodies and so forth. What are the tripwires to this agreement that our audience here should be looking out for if this thing, how long will it survive?
So I think one of the things that is an issue is the instability of the so-called GNU. First of all, you have something that we actually, that I want to mention that we shouldn't overlook, which happened with the Bella Bill, where you then had a situation where we all know that the DA is opposed to the Bella Bill. And on the eve of it being signed by the president, you then had the issue of private lobbying, which took place with AfriForum and Solidarity, friends of the DA. And so those are things, first of all, that put into question the integrity of the Office of the President. You have other things like Palapala, which we've mentioned, where the DA is now protecting the president. I mean, two different scenarios.
The DA has said that it's going to follow up. It's going to, there's been talk of a private prosecution. Yes.
When has the DA ever struggled to act on what they say they will do when it comes to that kind of thing?
Well, the intention is there and they'll get to it. But no. I hear you.
It's so very hard to be so decisive when you're sitting on that soft leather of those German sedans.
Very, very. That's
part difficult. Of the problem, because you've got parties that are tasting power for the first time and they want to appear tough. They want to appear like they're doing the right things and they're challenging the government. But at the end of the day, they're challenging their own government and the own perks that they're enjoying from it.
Perks that they were actually very vocal about. So the blue lights and all of that, which is costing now hundreds of millions, which they are mum about now. So that's part of the issue. So you have to, first of all, look at that. And then on the instability aspect, what has happened in Tshwane and what the rift that it's created between the ANC and the DA is also something, if you're asking what the public should be looking out for, that we should be looking out for. That kind of political friction threatens the stability of the GNU as well. And so those are some of the things. So on the one hand...
But you've just said to me that the DA is enjoying, and I tend to agree with you, both of you, the DA is enjoying the perks of office. It's not saying a word about that, the fact that we probably have the biggest, we're not the biggest, but if you take the deputies and the ministers, we have an extraordinarily huge cabinet. I mean, 75 people, I think, at the moment. Yeah. I can't believe we got here when we were talking about belt tightening and, you know, becoming like the Americans and
with
so forth.
600 million staff salary bill, by the way.
And so my question to you is, these tripwires will fall into the lap of, oh, it's so nice here, let me just keep quiet and keep taking the salary.
So those are the two threats, and that's what I'm saying. You either have a threat where you are becoming and you're finding a government that is more and more captured and more corrupt because of the protection of their own luxuries that they found, or you have an instability in the sense that the whole thing falls apart because there comes a time when the friction is just and the conflict is just that high that they can no longer work together. Either way, both scenarios are not good for the country.
You've both spoken about the economy. I always, you know, when I try to simplify it, it's the old political line, it's the economy stupid. When both of you say to me, there isn't an economic plan, there isn't a policy plan to this government, it makes me shudder thinking about the massive unemployment, the massive youth unemployment. How do you fix that? How can they fix it if you were giving them advice?
So I think the first thing is you've got to set clear direction. One of the biggest problems we've had in South Africa is you have an NDP and you have some sound directional guidance, and then you have that being muddied by statements where, you know, in front of this audience, we're pro land expropriation. In front of that audience, no, we're not going to do that. And those kind of mixed signals have been terrible in so many industries, the mining industry in particular and others. Mm-hmm. As well as other reforms that have to be brought in. And what was so important in the early stage of the life of this government was setting a clear direction and announcing those reforms. That's what needed to come out of that policy Lekgotla in July. And it was always going to be challenging because some of these reforms that are required require a bit of an internal battle within the tripartite alliance. Announcing labor reforms is going to be a tough ask, but it's part of what needs to be done. Announcing financial cuts on spending to bring down the debt and reduce our cost of debt, which is our greatest budget line item right now, all important. The ability to shut down state-owned entities that are a drain on our country and are just simply not adding value. These are all tough things that needed to be thrown into the equation in terms of how we go ahead. And there's been the radio silence emanating out of the space that is a concern, but rather what you have is a litany of trips to China and the UK and the US. And these trips can be valuable, make no mistake. But if the approach is to go to the investing community and say, invest in us because, you know, we're the rainbow nation, it's not going to cut it. We have to create an investor-friendly destination in South Africa. And for that, we have to announce major reforms. And I think there's a window of time after a new government is formed, where that first impression to the world can be created. And that window is starting to close rapidly as the world starts to wonder, is this just business as usual going forward?
We still are struggling with the same and actually even worsening levels of unemployment, even post, the last quarter. The QLF has revealed that. And so you don't really have real change that you've seen. What we have had, actually, and which has been, I think, in some ways, something that has made people believe that things are better, is that we've had business sentiment. So we've had good sentiment that's been happening. You've had a sense that the markets are happy, and you've had a sense that investors are ready again, but you actually have not genuinely had any change. And Michael speaks about policy, but I mean, I'm going to go a little bit more granular and say, even if you can agree on policy, what happens in the implementation of that policy within the administration is really what becomes most important, because currently you're sitting with, for instance, I'll make an example, in trade and industry, what appears to be an indecisive minister who is really unable to make decisions, not only about how to implement policy, but even decisions about things that are, fairly enough, maybe legacy issues, but that are wrong in that department. And so when you have those issues, it means that you can have the best policy in the world, but you're not going to have change. You're going to have, you know, you're going to sit, you sit with many of these institutions, and we hear some of them are actually currently, they have qualified audits and all sorts of issues, but you're not making decisions. You are not able to even say, here's what we want to achieve in the next, by midterm, here's what we want to have achieved. And you're not able to hold those administrators accountable for that. And so that has not changed. And that is a worry and a frustration.
Once again, I'd put it to you that it's all going to be okay because the deputy minister is from the DA.
The deputy minister is the most quiet person, even as we sit and engage and ask questions and hold and do the work of oversight and hold that administration and that executive accountable. The DA minister is the most quiet. So no, it's not going to be okay.
Not trying to personalize it to any party, because I hate when we get into this bouncing around between the two parties.
Well, it is. It's what it is. It's not a GNU. It's a Grand Coalition.
No, sure.
So the DA has to take it.
No, look, they do.
And used to give it.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's quite ironic that parties that used to be very strong opposition parties are now very thin-skinned in government. So I suppose that just comes with the territory. But certainly, I mean, the one part of the economy that you can't ignore right now is that we have, in the absence of real economic reforms, we have ministers running around claiming credit for the international oil price coming down and the effect on inflation. And I mean, I'm sorry, Justice, I say this. I mean, I know it's partly causes a laugh, but, you know, I also think we've got to be serious. I mean, with an economy in our state and unemployment to the level we're at, you know, we actually need this government to get serious on the question of the economy. And until they do, and as long as you've got ministers running around claiming credit because the fuel price came down because of oil, you know, it's really not going to give the appearance of a serious government that's out for real reforms. And I think that's why a lot of the initial optimism you're seeing in the markets is now being countenanced as cautious optimism.
Nobunti, let me ask you before I move on to there is, when you talk about trade and industry, you think about the sheer lack of movement, in fact, the sheer lack of any kind of initiative in the years under Minister Patel. And one would have thought this is the beginning of something new and proper. What you're telling me, and when I think about, I think it was the chief executive of Toyota South Africa saying last week that South Africa is in the first stages, and I thought he was being optimistic, of deindustrialization. That means that factories are closing down and people are losing jobs.
Absolutely.
And that means that we are all here in profound danger.
So it's going to seem very simple. I'm going to tell you something that's going to seem very simple, but that gives you an idea of what has been happening in that department and what has happened in the 100 days since. They are critical positions and vacancies that have not been filled for 3-4 years. I'm talking about DGs, I'm talking about CEOs of institutions. There are boards that are dysfunctional of entities and institutions that fall within the DTIC. There are vacant board positions. There are boards that have overstayed their period, which makes it actually, it contravenes even the PFMA. So there are issues like that that have happened. But in this first 100 days, there has been little to nothing that has been done just to address that, something as simple as that. Mm-hmm. And so I do not know how the DTIC was functioning under Minister Patel, because the things that we're now finding in terms of the state of that department, really for me, it makes it a department that actually cannot function. But what makes it more concerning is the lack of progressive action under this new minister and under this new administration.
I think one thing is so exciting about that particular portfolio is for the first time in, I think, 4 terms of parliament, the Department of Trade and Industry is not being led by a registered member of the Communist Party. Imagine the irony.
That is something. You talk about the ministers and so forth. One issue on trade and industry is that it is the engine that will create jobs. South Africa finds itself in the U.S. Constantly being looked at and people saying, is AGOA going to be renewed? What is the meaning of the access to that market that we used to have and so forth? So from what you've just said, from the minister visiting Washington, D.C. and so forth, it looks to me that South African businesses or businesses that trade a lot with the U.S. need to start thinking about where they will be if we are kicked out of AGOA.
Look, I think that one thing that I'll give to their credit is the work that is happening to try and retain that relationship and to make sure that that trade agreement works for South Africa. Mm. There is also a focus, quite a significant focus on trade on the continent with the free trade agreement, the Continental Free Trade Agreement, and ideas on how that should work. The problem with that is that, you know, you have basic issues like infrastructure development. So if you are not focused on infrastructure development, and actually, if you are not, as South Africa, becoming a pioneer, which actually the African Union had said South Africa should be a pioneer in infrastructure development throughout the continent. If you're not making that happen, even those plans and ideas about becoming a major trader on the continent are not going to come through. And so those are the issues of, you have AGOA and you have the attempts and the efforts to try and maintain AGOA, but you also have a strategy that says, actually, first of all, our strategy is to be an export-led economy. That's the first. The second is to say, we want to make sure that we are a significant player on the continent. But if you're not getting the basics right, if you're not ensuring infrastructure development, and you have budget that is allocated to that, but you're just not able to see the traction, like you say, that in the previous term, what was concerning was how there was just no traction in any of the areas of economic development. If you're not seeing infrastructure development, if you're not even saying and seeing the opportunity on the continent, which Europe is actually seeing, which Asia is seeing, which the US is seeing and taking, then, you know, we really are not going to move forward.
Michael Bowman, you have outlined brilliantly what is wrong with this GNU at the top, at the national level. And then you go off, and these past few weeks, you dive straight into bed with the ANC in Tshwane. And I'm sitting there thinking, what is it doing? What is it doing?
I'm glad it was you who raised it. Tshwane be good.
What we talk about the GNU at national level, but there is an impact at municipal metro level. This trend seems like, I was reading about a municipality in KZN, it's your old hunting grounds, Guadukuza. There will be more. Tell me Tell me what you're doing in China, because I don't get it. And maybe our audience will ask the same.
So, yeah, certainly. And I think one of the things that happened in Action SA after the 29 May elections is we had to sit down and we had to introspect about the approach we had taken. And there were two particular things that happened there. The one was to say, perhaps the approach of saying we are never, ever, ever going to work with these parties is a little bit immature in the way in which South Africa is moving. And it boxes you into a corner in a scenario where what do you do when the partners you're working with in the form of the DA and others are governing poorly, and you said you'll never govern with these guys, so you must just go and sit in the corner with your fingers on the lips for the rest of the term of office, which isn't really a sound principle.
Can I just say for the audience, this is amazing. We're getting an apology from a leader of a party in South Africa. This is good.
I missed it. Say it again, Michael.
Normally the way that's say done is you say, you took me out of context. But no.
Well, and the word never will never be used again by Action SA.
Well, I think we need to grow up a little bit, and we've gone through that process. Mm. And I think the second thing you've got to understand is we went out to the electorate with a very strong message of saying we will never, ever, ever work with these parties. Mm. And we got 1.29% of the vote. Mm. So, you know, you're going to cling on to a message that didn't get responded well to by voters? Mm. Or are you going to adapt in a changing world and try not to be a dinosaur? But as it relates to Chuane, we also took the decision to say you've got to deal with every decision on its merits, which means you might be working with this configuration of parties here because it's the best outcome for the residents, and that configuration of parties there because it's the best outcome for the residents. And unfortunately, the last few weeks, I'm afraid, has seen the worst of South African politics as it relates to the situation in Tshwane, because on every single metric, and I'll happily debate this with anyone here, Tshwane is a failed government. Tshwane is worse than eThekwini was under Mxolisi Kaunda, who had to be hounded out of there in terms of the KZN GPU. But for some reason, you can't go there. And I'm afraid there's a dynamic where if someone's governing badly, but they look like me and they talk like me, that's okay. We must defend that. And we were involved in a coalition that was failing on every single level. On the auditor general outcomes, it was in the same class as Buffalo City and Mangaung. Its liquidity was at 0.6, which any financial aficionados out there will tell you means it can't meet its short-term obligations. It owes Eskom 6.8 billion rand right now when it owed them nothing in 2020. Where are the payments for electricity been going? And service delivery, particularly in the townships where there has been a racial skew in service delivery, has ground to a halt. These are serious issues. And we had to ask ourselves a question. Are we just going to be good coalition partners and form part of a failed government for the next 2 years? Or can we actually show South Africans and the residents of a very troubled Gauteng that there could be a third way? It doesn't need to be blue. It doesn't need to be yellow. It could be led by green. And I think ahead of 2026, we need to start showing people that there are new options.
And so you're saying the ANC, which failed spectacularly in Tshwane between 1994 and 2016, will be this agent of change?
No, I think Action SA is going to be the agent of change. Action SA.
But you've seen Mayor Nasipi Moyo's cabinet, MMCs, ANC, there are some from other parties, but she is beholden to the ANC to do a huge chunk of the delivery.
Well, I think you've got to understand when you're in coalition, you're beholden to someone. And I think part of the problem why the previous government collapsed is because parties that didn't have a majority tried to govern like they did have a majority. And there's nothing wrong with being beholden when you're beholden to the needs to communities and parties representing those needs. If that is what you're beholden to, that is a good thing. And at the end of the day, we need to look at a scenario where executive authority, constitutionally and in every other sense, is defined in the mayor. Everyone else is a direct report of the mayor. And if you have a mayor going in there and driving change in the manner that we anticipate possible under Dr. Nasipi Moyo, we believe we can show South Africans a third way. Now, again, I'm not sitting here saying that the ANC's record in Tshwane has been good. The voters voted them out for a reason. But then I'm also saying to you, the DA's record since 2016 has been cataclysmic. The state of the city of Tshwane in the last 8 years is entirely a product of those particular arrangements. And at the end of the day, if you have the two biggest parties that are failing in their governance responsibilities, again, is action is say to sit in the corner and wait for the next term of office, or should we do something? And I would venture we've done something.
Mm. Nobuntu, I want to ask you, we talk about local government. We have elections coming up in 24 months. What are you anticipating needs to be done for you to raise your two seats in parliament to get to a higher percentage, for you to run the city of Tshwane or maybe the city of Joburg? And the same to you, Michael.
We have always maintained, and we maintain, that we're about the 61 million. Our very foundation as a party was about saying, and as it stands now, we are still actually pursuing the amendment of the Electoral Act. We're still pursuing electoral reform, because our very foundation was about saying, how do you get to a point where South Africans are duly and are fairly represented by leaders that actually serve them, by leaders that actually deliver? And so we continue on that. It is who we are. We are doing that even in Parliament. The way that we are working in Parliament and the way that we are engaging constituencies says that we are about the 61 million. And we want to make sure that we truly represent what South Africans want, and we truly hold government to be able to deliver on what South Africans want. We, as it stands now, are in communities, we're in all the municipalities, and we've started the work of working with and identifying candidates that actually are already doing work in communities, that actually already deliver to communities. I think it's important that we remain in full campaign mode all the time. You know, it's important to always be delivering in whatever way we can. And even though we hadn't been in the previous local elections, which means that we are not in any local government, we still do what is within our capacity to be able to respond to the issues that sit in municipalities. I think how we perform in national, how we perform in Gauteng, and we're doing a lot of work with one seat in Gauteng, and then I think we're doing significant work in being an opposition in Gauteng. As it is now, we have called for the Emfuleni municipality to be put under administration. We're doing work there. So we are doing work in the different municipalities, and we are responding to the needs of communities, because we've always said that there has to be true representation of communities and there has to be true delivery to communities.
Mm. Michael, 2026?
Yeah, so I think we always look at a local government election with a lot more excitement. I think Action SA has an orientation more aligned to local government. That's our sweet spot. And I think, quite frankly, while the spotlight is understandably on the GNU, the greatest constitutional crises facing the South African today are of local government. That is what is stopping the electricity when people flick the switch. That's what means the water is not flowing through the pipes. And that's what's having more and more people in this country drowning in their own sewage. These are the real crises facing our people, and I'm quite convinced this is the place where we need to see the big political frontier, because municipalities are broken. Mm. The funding model of municipalities is creating crises right across the board. We were even asked the question by some of our members, I mean, Tshwane is bankrupt, why are we trying to govern Tshwane? And we had to introspect a little bit about that. If you look at some of my colleagues here, you'll see the slogan on their chest, "Let's fix South Africa." Imagine saying that on your chest, but you're not willing to fix the capital city. And you've got to understand that if you're in politics and local government, you've got to be up for rolling up your sleeves and, you know, fixing broken places. But from our point of view, it comes down to a few things. One, certainly I think we overstretched ourselves by contesting all 9 provinces in this election. I think that was a major learning from our point of view. And most fundamentally, local government allows you to select particular municipalities, enough of them that you build footprints in 9 provinces, but not so much of them that you end up being outspent by major parties 40-50 to 1, which was the nature of this particular election. Now, I think the second dynamic we really want to deal with is candidate selection. When you look at the caliber of councillors in South Africa, they really, in many cases, represent the dregs of society. These are not people who are driving service delivery, who are ethical, accountable,
quality people who are contributing. And I think if we can fix that model and find ways of identifying and partnering with communities to find people who have a constituency already, people who have a trust relationship built in their communities, that would go a long way. I think it's important as well to leverage the brand of Herman Mashaba's mayoralty. I know certainly the lifespan of South Africans' memory has a limit, but if you look at the mess in Gauteng, which is getting worse and worse, the only time where there's really been a glimmer of hope in this province was between 2016 and 2019 under his mayoralty, notwithstanding any challenges that may have existed as well, to give a full and frank account. But ultimately, we're a party with a track record of local government that we think we'll be able to exploit credibly.
I'm going to ask members of our audience to come up with questions of their own. Nobuntu has to leave at the top of the hour, so we'll start the questions directed at her. If you do have a question, please raise your hand and we'll come find you with a mic. Before I take that question, I want to ask one last question of both of you. You've made such brilliant points. Many of the issues you identify are similar. It remains a mystery for many of us in the room. Why? Anyway, moving on. Why is it that you were in the Moonshot Pact, its iterations? Why are you not working together? And why is it that he's mentioned the most hopeful mayor of this great city of Johannesburg, the leader of Build One SA, your co-founder, is probably the most successful election result of the DAs, and you're not working together. You seem so close. Please tell
me. So, first of all, I could see Michael wants to respond, and I'll let you. I just want to correct something. We were never part of the Moonshot Pact.
Yes.
Just need to categorically state this and put it on the record.
but answer the question for me.
Sure. So, first of all, as Build One SA, we have a particular model that we took. And we were very clear that when we established ourselves, Action SA already existed, as an example.
Yes.
And we were very clear that what we want to do and what we're doing doesn't exist in the political landscape. So what we did, and I mean, we learned some lessons from that as well, as we went out to communities and we said, choose your own leaders. We have them endorsed. We have a process of candidate selection that meant that every single person who was on our list came from the community, right? And so the very essence of who we are means that we have to work a certain way. And it's a way that's quite different from how conventional political parties work. That's something that we want to retain. That's something that we want to keep. And that's something that we want to keep, you know, building on. And we think that it comes as close as you can to the kind of electoral reform that we want to see. So that's the first thing.
A cynic like one of my friends in the room here would say, it hasn't been wildly successful, has it?
It hasn't been, given what's given the number that we got, or given the results that we had. However, we had been in existence for all of 18 months at that time. And you do need time. When you come with something that is a change, when you come with something that's different, you do need time to get people on board with that. One. Two, our model is really, really well suited to local government and to local elections. And so we want to test that, come local government and local elections, because it says in your community, and it's more of a constituency, it's very close to a constituency-based model, and we're saying in your community, choose your leader. And so it's very suited to that. So let's see what it does in 2026, and we're very, very very positive about what will look like in 2026. Having said that, we are friends with Action SA. Are you denying in front of the people?
No, I was to say getting all emotional.
We are friends. We are friends with Action SA. In Parliament, we work friends with benefits. We work closely in Parliament together, and it's never to say that the way we have started working won't morph or grow into anything else in the future, because we are very closely aligned, and like I say, we are working together, and it's not to say that in the future it may not grow into something else.
Mm. Yeah,
sure. That's promising, huh? No, I think from our point of view, we have been in talks. There have been talks going on for quite a while. And I think we're growing increasingly concerned about the proliferation of parties that, yes, they have their differences. Let's acknowledge that. But actually, differences are a good thing. And consolidating what I would like to call the rational center of South African politics is a good thing. Because if you look at this election, the rational center of South African politics did not do very well. Growth was on the margins. Growth was on the parties whose policy offerings included sending young pregnant women to Robben Island and switching off the life support machine of foreigners at Rahima Musa. So at the end of the day, the rational center didn't do well in this election. And I think a lot of voters just don't understand why these different parties exist individually and separate from one another. And from our point of view, we are opening up discussions with a bunch of parties, including Build One South Africa. We've started a number of talks that are producing partnerships at a parliamentary level, which is a natural area to collaborate and an easy first win. But we want to see that progress. We want to see more parties contesting under a single banner in the next election and be more direct and more aggressive about that. Because at the end of the day, size matters in South African politics. And you got to consolidate political parties as part of a growth strategy.
I'm going to take the question from that gentleman who was up first.
Evening, everyone. Thanks for having this.
Sure. Please introduce yourself. Thank you.
Xavier Bapu. No affiliation to anything. Thanks for the panelists for all your insights. My question's kind of simple, but maybe a bit complex. What are three things that the president can do right now? Because you guys have explained that there's an accountability issue. We're getting, you know, happy about these new things they're doing, but there's not much accountability from the new government. What are three things the president can do right now to show that the GNU is accountable to you guys, the opposition, because that's the main point of our position? And what's one thing that South Africans can do to hold the GNU accountable? And then just to make a slight note, not to offend anyone, the GNU Lekgotla did result in a plan. That plan should be coming out at the end of November. It's called the Medium-Term Development Plan. They just haven't worked out all the kinks yet. So it will be publicly released, or it was supposed to be, at the end of November. So there is a plan. They just couldn't release it immediately.
I'd like to thank you for that question, and I love the note at the end. Thank you. What are the three things the president can do?
And three things. Release the secret plan. because a plan that isn't public is no good for accountability. We need to know what the priorities and the KPIs of the country are so there can really be accountability. The committees in parliament should actually be focusing on holding government to account against that plan. And until there is, there's nothing. Number two, subject himself to parliamentary inquiry in relation to Palapala. That story is totally unbelievable. To explain that you cannot argue that there is a transgression of a crime when the sheer existence of more money than is legally allowed in law, it makes absolutely no sense. And the efforts to protect the president, when in fact parliament should be able to go through its motions in that regard, I think has been disappointing. And fire the justice minister. I mean, how can this really still be a debate that a justice minister implicated in VBS can preside over the same NPA that's trying to prosecute those crimes? I mean,
do you want to?
Yeah, I think I agree with Michael. I would add that the people who must be subjected to inquiries, not just the president. You already mentioned the Minister of Justice and everybody else who is implicated in any kind of corruption must be subjected to an inquiry. I think that's critical. Secondly, we need to know what consequence management looks like. We need to start to see consequence management, not only for those who are corrupt, but for those who don't deliver. That's something that we have not seen in this country. I don't believe we've ever seen. And we need to start to see that. We see departments that don't perform, that, and you have ministers that are rewarded again and again. You have reward actually for corruption. You have reward for non-performance. We need to start to see consequence management.
How does Parliament make the president fire, for example, the Minister of Justice. With this supermajority you've spoken about, it almost seems to me that you're climbing up this wall and you're going to fall, and he will just laugh because he's corrupted.
The way that becomes interesting is you've got to put the parties in this GNU under pressure. So perhaps what's required is that an ultimatum is issued to the president. And the president is given an amount of time, a reasonable amount of time, something that respects the processes and the rule of law and all those things, 6 months, whatever, say to remove the justice minister, failing which will bring a motion of no confidence. Now, it's true, 29% of the parliament is in opposition. But does the president really want to put the loyalty of his coalition partners to the test on this issue when they themselves have been so outspoken? There's lots of levers of power that you can pull, and you should never underestimate the effect that one can have in those moments, because very few of those parties can afford to be raising those hands nice and high in defense of that kind of thing.
Parliament has got to use the legislative powers that it has, and Parliament has those legislative powers. And like Michael's saying, subjecting anybody to that process already puts a strain on that genuine, might not be a risk that the president would be willing to take.
I'm looking forward to seeing that.
We're going to do it.
And we're going to keep it interesting while we do it.
It would be absolutely fantastic to see that happening. Yeah. Thank you. By the way, these Christians are all genuine. No. I'm going to take Kantan.
Just a very quick question. None of you are talking about the elephant in the room. MK, party that came from nowhere, has absolutely shot the lights out in this election. Very clearly had a message that resonated with the electorate. Also not part of the GNU. Why are you guys not talking to them? And why are you not talking about them?
I mean, Michael already mentioned some of the policy issues that exist that I know that we are fundamentally opposed to.
Please tell me, because I don't know MK's policy issues. They have not stated a policy.
So first of all, the MK, it was interesting to see them in Parliament because they are non-constitutionalists. So as a start, they don't agree with the Constitution. So that's a start. The second, I mean, you had ridiculous policies coming out, like if a teenager is pregnant, they must be taken to Robben Island and separated from the rest of society. So you have those kinds of things that exist there. But more importantly, you cannot work with a party. I mean, to this day, I'm not sure I can tell you. I mean, and these are random things we've heard here and there. I'm not sure that I can tell you what's not only the policy positions or the policies of the MKR, but also why it ultimately exists. And I mean, I personally have had a sense that this is an ANC issue, and that the MK exists because of issues that have happened between leaders and factions in the ANC. And so it's very, very difficult to say that this is a party that you could work with. But having said that, in Parliament, we do need to collaborate on some issues. We do need to vote together on some issues. And that door's always open. I'm constantly having conversations with people of parties like the MK, like the EFF, all the parties, because when it comes down to numbers, there's times where you just need the numbers and you have to agree that this is a principle, for instance, on the Minister of Justice that we all agree on. And those are the kinds of things I think we can collaborate on. But as to why we don't work with the MK, really, I don't know what you mean. If you mean maybe coming together, that's difficult. But in terms of collaboration as an opposition in Parliament, I think there's opportunity for that. There's always opportunity for that. And I think those are conversations we need to have, particularly on key issues when we're talking about motions of no confidence and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think from our point of view, there's no reluctance to talk about them. It's just I can't respond to issues about Chuane and talk about MK because they're not part of Chuane and that wasn't the question. But from our point of view, it's true. I mean, their growth has been meteoric. I mean, I'm one of those people who laughed at polls that put them at 46% in KZN before the election. I mean, imagine. And it's true. They're a significant force. They're the official opposition in Parliament. And again, recognizing that there are no angels in our industry, you've got to be able to have engagements and conversations with everyone.
Now, you know, I share the view that I don't think formal collaboration and coalition with MK is on our particular cards. But certainly when you're in Parliament and you're part of a 29% block of the opposition, when we call ourselves a constructive opposition, what that means is sometimes we will work with the government to support a good idea. And sometimes we'll work with the opposition to defeat a bad one. And we have opened up lines of communication in that regard, and we will use them as and when it's necessary. Because, for example, if you're going to bring a private member's bill in Parliament, you've got to get it out of committee. And you've got to have a majority in committee to get it out. And you have to be willing to work with any number of political parties to get that to the floor of Parliament. And we've opened up those lines, and we intend to use them to the benefit of our legislative agenda and our constituents as well.
I can give an example of when we worked with the MK. It was with the issue of who becomes the official opposition. Because you realize you have in Parliament, you have the GNU, and traditionally, we got to Parliament and the ANC was the majority party, and then the DA was the official opposition. And so that's something that we came together as this 29% and said, but that can't be. The MK needs to be the official opposition, and the leader of the MK in Parliament needs to be the leader, the official leader of the opposition, because ultimately the DA is no longer the opposition. And we worked together on that until we won on that. And now the MK is the official opposition. So those are some of the issues that we've already worked together as a bloc, this 29% in Parliament with.
It's interesting for me that President Cyril Ramaphosa says the collapse of the GNU is too ghastly to contemplate, using his words. The leader, the federal chair of the DA, Helen Zille, says we will be burnt to ashes if it collapses. And essentially saying those guys, meaning the MK party and the EFF, essentially, should not be allowed into power. And I, in your response, I kind of got the sense that you would agree that the MK party, and to a lesser extent, perhaps the EFF, are too ghastly to contemplate in alliance or in power.
I don't know what gave you that idea. You know, the reality is that ultimately what South Africans voted for was not a grand coalition or a GNU. Ultimately, what South Africans voted for was an ANC with less power. And that's actually, it was an option that the ANC could have taken in listening to the voters. They could have gone into the seventh administration with their 40%, and we would all vote in Parliament on a case-by-case basis based on the merits or demerits of what they put on the table. So the reality is we don't have to think about, oh, who would be better to work with the ANC? Would it be the MK and the AFF? Would it be the DA and the... Either way, you know, ultimately, particularly when you've had history and record of corruption, you will have the same issues that we have now, where we find that the DA are less inclined to speak up against corruption because now they are also on what, when I was a kid, was called the gravy train.
I'm going to stop you there. I'm going to ask this gentleman from Alexandra Township Action SA.
Thanks very much, Justice, and good evening. My name is Shadrach Mkonto. I'm a Council of Action SA in Alex. First question regarding to the two panelists. The JNU, when we listen to the news, the South African people recommend it being a good governance for South Africa, rather than if the ANC taken the way of working with MK and EFF, the country will be in the mess in the sense of investors and all that. Now, the lady and the gentleman, what is your take on that? Is because I can hear what you say, but the public recommend the government of the JNU, that they are doing well. I mean, some of us here as well, we can see that petrols have gone down. There's a lot of things that's been happening. The ministers are doing well. Now, the second question is directed to you, Michael. In Joburg, Action SA is on a legislative level with the Speaker. In Tshwane, we are in a JLU governing with the ANC, which is questionable to the rest, like Justice Malalev said. Now, what if people can ask, Michael, is the Action SA ready to be in the JNU government nationally with regard to that you supporting the ANC in Joburg, not really on an issue-on-issue basis in Joburg, but in Tshwane as an executive and all that? What will then your answer to the people of South Africa? Thank you.
Okay, so let's talk about the optimism first. And I mean, I think it's really important not to be the messenger that gets shot in this process. Athol Trollope put it to me in an interesting way, because he was part of that first parliamentary caucus where Nelson Mandela was the president. And he said being in opposition to Nelson Mandela was a very difficult thing, because being critical of the great man was, you know, definitely not something he was going to sell. And I suppose in many ways there are parallels with what we're dealing with now. South Africans are always very optimistic about a novel idea. People were that way about Jacob Zuma in 2009, and criticism of Jacob Zuma was not tolerated. We were that way about Ramaphosa in 2018. So optimism in the GNU could really be a case of third time bitten. And I think from that point of view, there's definitely a dynamic where that optimism needs to be balanced against what actions and changes are arising from this government. Because to go back to your earlier point, Cyril Ramaphosa and Helen Zille can't go around telling people to love us because we're not them. At some point, they're going to have to do something. I mean, jobs have to rise, unemployment go down, growth go up. You know, there's got to be something to express love for this government other than saying we're just not those guys. But at the same time, to address the point about Johannesburg and the GNU, we are in the legislature in Johannesburg. We're not part of a coalition there. We're very concerned about the governance in that city at the moment. And, you know, generally the lack of a vision for a number of serious challenges facing the residents of Johannesburg right now. Also get very worried by statements of mayors who say that they shouldn't expect anything from us for 2 years. I mean, that's definitely not what the people of Joburg are looking for. And the moves we've made in Tshwane are definitely about the dynamics that I've outlined there. Whether that means we would look at the GNU, I mean, I suppose we will be open. We must always be open-minded. But our concern really would be that we would be deepening a crisis in the opposition if we go and join the GNU, where 71% of parliament is already. We'd have to ask ourselves the question, would we add more value to the South African people being another one of those ministers shipped around in a German sedan? Or would we add more value if we are a strong, constructive voice of the opposition in an environment where it looks like we will need to play the role of an opposition far greater than larger parties who aren't well equipped to be an opposition party? So, it's not much of an answer to the question, because it's a debate that will go on. But just from my own gut reaction, I would sense that the greatest need in South African democracy right now is to counterbalance this colossus of a GNU with a strong, rational opposition voice.
No, Wintu has to go. I'm going to take one last question from this lady over here, and I will release you to go. Or rather, you've released yourself.
Good evening, everyone. So my name is Thabang Matabane. So I have a more probably a clarifying question, or maybe a perspective from your end, right? So there's been a narrative just around public-private partnership, you know, in almost, you know, every conversation we hear about. And my concern really is, what does it actually look like when there isn't actually even a plan, a collaborative plan from all the parties, from the government? What would you be expecting the private sector to do exactly? If maybe you have a perspective or clarify for an ordinary person what this narrative is actually about. Thank you.
So maybe let me give you an example. I spoke earlier about infrastructure development.
and how it could be a catalyst for our trade relations, particularly on the continent. Now, the private sector has a very critical role to play in that. Because, for instance, if you talk about infrastructure, if you talk about telecoms, for instance, the more we're able to invest in telecoms on the continent, then the better it is and the better it places the continent and places us for trade on the continent. So that is just one example. And more domestically, when you look at public-private partnerships, if you look, for instance, from an economic perspective, and you're thinking about areas where, for instance, even with investment, you know, part of the conversations we've been having is about investment into various sectors. And if you have more investments and partnerships locally as well, that is something that can see us having a better collaboration and can see us being able to reach even areas where we haven't been able to reach and levels we haven't been able to reach in terms of our economic development. So those are just some examples. For instance, as well, when you look at energy, and I mean that's always the big argument that happens is we've been able to stabilize our energy, but that was one of the ways, and that continues to be one of the ways that we can ensure the sustainability going forward with renewable energy in the country when it comes to energy, is if we work with the private sector and have public-private partnerships.
But I mean, I drove here and I had to laugh when I turned at the corner, this beautiful, amazing building, Discovery. Building, and I'm thinking in my head about Adrian Gore is the deputy chair of Business Unity South Africa, and he says last week, not a week and a half ago, we could reach 3% GDP growth if we continue to work together with government. And yet at the same time, the president that he's talking to, right like this, and to the point about public-private partnerships, has just signed into law the National Health Insurance Act, which every single healthcare leader in this country says will devastate the healthcare industry and has zero chance of actually going ahead. So the talk is the talk, but it's, oh, I listened to you when you've helped me fix Eskom. But hey, you know, I'm just going to devastate another industry altogether, an industry that, you know, works to a large extent.
And that becomes the issue. It's the inconsistency in terms of what the administration, what the president says about the role of the private sector. And then the policies that you have that are like the NHI and that don't even take into consideration some of the contributions where you're saying don't altogether cut out the NHI, but take the contributions that will make this work better and that will make it a better partnership with the private sector. And it's a serious inconsistency with our government. And those are the things that we actually have to continue to fight as an opposition.
Mm. Do you mind if I respond?
Yes.
So I think the first problem is until you have the strategy and the direction of the country being defined, everything else is in limbo. I mean, even right now, our international relations is meant to serve a national strategy. If you don't have a national strategy, what relationships are we fostering? What relationships are we letting go of? Is Cuba really the most important country in our international network? I probably don't think so. And we need to understand that it's got to flow from a strategy. From there, we need to look at the finances of the country. There are very clear cases of urgent need to invest money in public infrastructure, by way of an example, where we don't have the budget to do it. Take a look at Transnet. That is such a classic example of a revenue-generating unit, one that a huge amount of capital needs to be sunk into to realize that revenue, and one where the private sector will win the battle 1,000 times to 1 in being more efficient than government in getting it done. That's a prime example, and there needs to be much stronger leadership in this regard. These are the kind of reforms we were hoping to arise out of a policy Lekgotla in July. My friend there tells me the top secret classified document will come out in November. But at a certain point in time, you know, these are some of the changes. The problem is these changes involve breaking a few eggs to make an omelet. You know, the tripartite alliance is not going to react well to this. public-private partnerships are swear words to parts of the ANC and parties in their ecosystem. So it's going to be a serious challenge to see whether or not they have enough backbone to get it done. But there's no question government doesn't have the money to do these things. And there can also be no question it doesn't have the capacity in certain regards. And that's where the private sector, who is sitting on a huge amount of capital right now because of a lack of confidence long-term in our economy, is the key that needs to unlock this equation.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for coming here today. I'm going to ask Nobuntu to give me 1 minute. For citizens like us, what do the next four years and 9 months look like? And how long will this GNU last? And the same to you, Michael, your closing remark.
I'm not a Sangoma.
We thought you were. That's why we asked you here.
So I'm not going to be able to predict how long the GNU will last. But I will say this. We do want the GNU to work. Any person who doesn't want, who's a South African, and doesn't want the GNU to work, does not have the interests of South Africans at heart. But here's what I will say. The GNU cannot work without a strong opposition, without a strong force of accountability holding. And we have often underestimated the importance of opposition and the importance of accountability. It has never been as important as it is now. And it is not just only up to the parties that sit on the opposition benches to ensure that this government is held accountable. It is also up to the public. We, as has been said before, have tended to get into these moments of euphoria, where now we're in the GN euphoria, where we had the Rainbow Nation and we swept things under the carpet and we didn't truly engage on the issues. We've had it throughout the past 30 years, and this is one of those times where we need to be optimistic, but cautiously optimistic, where we need to be optimistic and sober. In fact, where we need to be optimistic, but also sober, and make sure that we don't again wake up 4 years and 9 months from now and go, what a mess, the country's gone.
Thank you. Michael?
I don't know how long it will last. I share the view that we need good government in South Africa. And we do not want to be the kind of opposition that's gleeful about failures. We actually rather be the kind of opposition that can be constructive in supporting good things and good ideas. And applaud good things when they happen. Quite frankly, that would be such a welcome change. The question is, there's a lot of barriers in the way, including the attitudes of the individual political parties. We can see that could become as easy a derailment to this exercise as local government events, as bills like NHI and Bella, and like so many other things. So, you know, we don't have the benefit of a crystal ball, and I think the ANC's own internal politics is going to get more and more interesting as it relates to this question approaching their NGC, etc., next year. But I think from our point of view, to respond to the question the gentleman asked earlier, and I don't think we did at the time, what can we do as a country, is we need to be thinking and critical thinking people when it comes to our approach to this government. And that doesn't mean we can't be optimistic. We should be optimistic. We should find things to believe in. My goodness, we desperate to believe in something in this country. But at the same time, what we can't be is sheep who applaud, you know, fish for swimming. We cannot get to the stage where, I mean, I got into an argument on social media when the largest cabinet in South African history was announced. And people who would have previously shouted down the idea are now saying, but maybe you've got to spend money to make money. And you're saying, if we're going to start making excuses for bad government because we're terrified of the alternative, then we're going to give a free ride to politicians who, by the way, across the board, across all political parties, present company excluded, of course, politicians who are given a free ride are going to abuse you. And that's why society, opposition parties, and the media. I mean, some of the media, as it relates to this GNU, really are more PR agencies than they are reporting the news at the moment. And we need to get real as a country that we got to be critical thinking and we can't be the Mbongis of this government.
Mm.
Michael, Nobuntu, thanks so much. It's been absolutely lovely to chat to both of you. Thank you, everyone who attended today, and thank you for your participation. Thank you.
Thank you.